Welcome to Human School. I'm your host, Dr. Patil Armenian. After 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 4 years of residency, and 2 years of fellowship, I thought I was done. I did my time, got my degrees, and now I was just gonna live life. Well, think again. Some of my greatest schooling has come after my formal education was complete, and it keeps on coming. Join me at Human School, where we can learn together. I'm an emergency physician and medical toxicologist working at a large teaching hospital in California. I'm also a mom, wife, sister, daughter, and friend. Whether you work in healthcare or not, you too lead a busy life. Together, let's work on how we can thrive in all of our real-world roles. On this podcast, we'll dig deep into what it means to constantly learn and evolve, to be human. Every other week, I'll share some of my personal stories, interview inspiring people, and offer tools to help you learn more about yourself. Being on the front lines in the ER, you learn a lot about life and death. And though my philosophies were born in a busy emergency room, they can apply to anyone trying to live a joyful life here on Earth. Please listen, share, and subscribe to this podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on Instagram at Human School Podcast, and feel free to let me know what topics or guests you want to hear about. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review it. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Human School. On this podcast, my hope is that in being open about my experiences, I can help others. We're all going through the same things, and we're not alone. In this episode, I'm going to talk about how I burned out. Burnout is talked about a lot nowadays, sometimes in the correct context, and sometimes not. This is the WHO, or World Health Organization, definition of burnout. Burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. There's three dimensions that characterize it. 1. Feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion. 2. Increased mental distance from one's job or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job. And 3. Reduced professional efficacy. Burnout refers specifically to phenomena in the occupational context and should not be applied to describe experiences in other areas of life. So this was the World Health Organization definition. And before we even get into burnout, I want to introduce a new term, burn-in. This term came to me when I was trying to figure out how I got to burnout in the first place. In my case, I burned in for 2 years before finally burning out. I was keeping in my bitterness, my anger, my resentment, my annoyances, and my exhaustion. Keeping these things in was counterproductive. Instead of making my life smoother, things were getting harder. So a handful of seemingly small incidents added up to tip me over the edge. The first incident had to do with research. It's really hard to do good research and also work clinically as a doctor. I'm in awe of anyone who is able to juggle both of those well. So when I got the role of being the site principal investigator, or PI, for a large multi-center NIH-funded study at my institution, I was honored and excited. My old department chair was the site principal investigator, but when he left to be chair at another hospital, he recommended me for the role. I was fully in, even driving 4 hours to the primary site to meet in person with the main study investigators to show that I was part of the team and ready to work. Everyone was friendly and welcoming, and it felt like a real team. I'm an ER doctor in my heart, at my core, and the ER is all about teamwork and trusting each other with very clear lines of communication. So in any part of my work life, I'm always looking for that, maybe even forcing it sometimes. I've learned the hard way that not everyone has that team mentality, most often, unfortunately, in the research setting. Now, please remember that I'm only talking about my own biased personal experiences here And I'm not generalizing to entire sectors in medicine. I know that there are really awesome research groups out there, and I've since done research with some amazing co-researchers. Now, about a few months into this research study, we were enrolling study subjects when I was due to start maternity leave. I was really looking forward to my son's birth and spending the first 3 months of his life bonding with him. Since there was plenty of advance notice, I came up with a good plan to cover my principal investigator duties while I was out on leave. I recruited three of our best faculty to fill in for me. They were added to the study, oriented by myself and the site coordinator, and ready to work in my place. 3 months later, when I returned to work, I was dismayed to find out that not a single patient had been enrolled in the study. That was not good. The main PI wanted to talk to me, and we had a phone meeting during which he expressed his extreme dismay that we hadn't enrolled anyone in months. The site coordinator was also on the call and stayed quiet the whole time. That phone meeting was on my baby's first Halloween. He was dressed up as a peapod while I was working an ED shift and being told that my maternity leave was being interpreted as me being lazy. After the call, I reached out to my three colleagues and asked if the screened subjects didn't qualify for the study. Each of them individually told me that they were never called and therefore never had the chance to enroll anyone. To be clear, they received no pages, emails, texts, or phone calls. Basically, the site coordinator never contacted the three faculty for any possible subjects and then completely threw me under the bus to the main investigator. She and the main PI were acting like I had just taken a long vacation and left no one to cover for me. And if you don't know, maternity leave is not a vacation. After that call, I quietly began to distance myself from the research team and was no longer interested in the study. I began to burn in. Instead of discussing her actions with her, I bottled it up, which might not have been the best move. This was the third research-related drama I'd had in the last few years, and it was the straw that broke the camel's back. If this incident was happening today, I would have dealt with it much differently. I would have spoken up, advocated for myself, called others out more, and probably not let them have so much power over me. But while I knew those tools and had used them in the past, I was too tired and intimidated to rock the boat. Instead, I just fizzled inwards. This was the beginning of the long burn-in. What does burning in feel like? It's more than just a rut. I was so tired, bothered by little things, felt unappreciated, sometimes invisible at work, and had a sinking feeling that something's wrong. Some more things: not being excited to go into work, snapping at residents a little more than normal. I felt like this slow burn of giving up was weighing on me. I knew something was wrong, so I tried to do things I did in the past that had helped me. My go-to was always an art project. They never failed to keep me on track. I love a big project, especially something longitudinal, to get me through difficult things. Mentally, I did really well through medical school and residency because I had great outlets. I always had an art project going, and I exercised regularly. In medical school, I painted a lot, usually big canvases that would take me up to a year to complete. I went to medical school in Boston, where I lived in an apartment overlooking the Charles River. I knew that I wanted to move back to California, but I loved Boston and my apartment so much. So for my entire final year of medical school, I set up a camera in my window and took the same exact photo of the Charles River with the Mass Ave bridge in it as my goodbye to the city. By the end, I felt ready to leave. I never even thought about burnout in med school. I was too busy learning. When I started residency, I was really scared and didn't know how I'd get through intern year, which is the first year of residency. I started my drawing a day project. Every day at work, I would make a little drawing in a Moleskine notebook of something from the day. I actually can't really draw, so most of it was quotes from the day or funny stick figure drawings. I carried it around in my scrub pocket for a year, and it was the bright spot in many difficult days. Starting in the second year of residency, I rented an art studio right next to the hospital and would go there after shifts to paint. The studio building opened up once a month to visitors, so I had to have new paintings or photos every month. It was a great motivator and helped me keep my head screwed on properly. Then in the latter half of my residency, I was informed by a senior faculty member that I should focus more on medicine and less on my art. Now, I'd never gotten a bad evaluation this whole time, always had good test scores, performed well clinically, did a lot of side projects for the department, but still somehow it came across to me that if I wanted to be chief resident the following year, I needed to deprioritize art. And I definitely wanted to be a chief, no question about it. So I got rid of my studio and effectively stopped making art. I didn't even really tell anybody why I got rid of my studio. Even to this day, I don't think my sister knows why I got rid of my studio at that time. But she'll find out when she listens to this. I became a chief resident the following year. I focused on the department, and my first taste of a tiny bit of burnout happened during the month that my co-chief left to do an elective. That meant I was the only chief resident around and dealt with all of my co-residents' issues for a whole month with no support or no one to vent to. Once my co-chief got back, it was all better, and I quickly went back to normal. By the time I started fellowship, art and exercise fell by the wayside. I simply had no time. I was a full-time fellow learning a new specialty, toxicology, while also working for the first time as an ER doctor on my own. This is when I started doing research, going to conferences, lecturing regularly, and publishing papers. I also worked a full roster of shifts in the ED and saw toxicology patients in the hospital. Bottom line, I was all in on academic medicine. But I didn't have the time to use the outlets I had in the past that managed my burn-in. For the first time in years, about 6 years after finishing fellowship, I started a one-year-long art project called the Aftermath Project. It's actually still live on Instagram, but I don't post to it anymore. I started this to bring me some joy at work. I would take pictures of objects in the ER, what the place looked like after a resuscitation, just the beauty of a still life after all the shit had gone down. And it really helped me to enjoy my shifts again, even for a little bit each day. I kept it undercover, but some of the nurses knew I was doing it and would call me on shift to a room. I'd rush in thinking they needed help with something, but they'd just be like, "Look at this floor," and I'd take a picture. Or, "Look how many vials of Ativan we just used," and I'd take a picture. 1 year after that, the burn-in was beginning to deepen as I felt constant microaggressions at work and growing disrespect. I didn't feel that my opinion mattered regarding the workplace and that other faculty members' priorities were placed above mine. It's a much longer story, but at this point, I was actually thinking about leaving toxicology. I had set in my mind that an upcoming toxicology conference in Chicago would be my decision maker. Until I became a mom, I went to about 3 medical conferences a year, always presenting research or lecturing. I used to say that I wouldn't go to a conference unless I was doing something there. When my son was tiny, I took a year off from conferences, and this would be my first one back. I was so happy to see my favorite colleagues from different places, but most importantly, the ones from San Francisco, where I had trained. I'm so lucky that I've always gotten to train with amazing people, and I quickly made lunch plans for the first day with one of my favorite mentors. We talked for a while about everything, including work, home, all of it. After decades in the field, he was still excited and enthusiastic. It helped me remember that I love toxicology too. I went to lectures and research presentations that were interesting, but more so, I enjoyed being around my friends at the conference. It was actually my first time going to the conference just for fun. I had nothing to present, so I could take the time to be present. The next morning, my mentor and I met in the conference hotel lobby at 6:30 a.m. to go on a special mission. And for those of you who know me, know I am not a morning person, so that's a big deal for me to be up at 6:30. Now, art installations and museums have always been some of my favorite places where I can think. So I was dragging him with me to some random intersection in Chicago where there was a James Turrell Skyspace installation. I wanted to see what it looked like at sunrise. James Turrell is one of the key artists in my favorite genre of art, the light and space movement. Helen Pashkin and Dan Flavin are some of my other favorite light and space artists, who explore reality and beauty through, you guessed it, manipulations of light through objects and in space. Some light and space artists, like James Turrell, create physical experiences where you sit in a room or a specially designed space to view the art. The space even becomes the art, as in his sky spaces. A sky space is a room that has a large hole in the ceiling that opens up to the sky. Imagine you're inside, looking up at the sky, and the sky is framed. In that frame are LED lights which change colors. We got out of our cab at an intersection that looked like nothing was there except for a small round building like a pavilion that you could walk in and out of through all sides. Someone biked through it, not glancing up. We sat on the benches and looked up, waiting for sunrise. The sky was dark blue, and the LED lights inside the sky space changed from orange to purple to blue to green, but one of them was broken and was randomly blinking, making it feel like a spaceship was landing. I was inspired, and at that point, I knew that toxicology wasn't the problem. My mentor probably doesn't even know this, but he really helped me with that realization. It was such a gift for him to go with me on that sunrise art adventure. So if toxicology wasn't the problem, then what was? This is where I had to take inventory, actually make a list of all the things I did to see if anything could go. Once I was back home, I was back to my multiple jobs as an academic emergency physician, medical toxicologist, teacher, researcher, and research director of the emergency department. I had worked hard to get that research director title, and it was the thing that put me in the upper echelons of administration in my department. However, that's what I had to see, that it was a title, and it was my ego that wanted that title. On my inventory list, it seemed that it was the only job that could go. I didn't want to leave the position vacant without someone to do the work, and felt that another faculty member was truly better suited for the research director position than me. 2 months after that Chicago trip, that faculty member and I met and discussed the research division. He was interested in being the research director, and our chair was happy to have us transition. That was one big task off my plate. The thing about being research director is that I didn't even have the time to work on my own toxicology research properly, because I was entrenched in the department's business. That little bit helped. Though I didn't have the title or the extra pay, I gained back some of my time. Somehow, though, it wasn't enough. About 10 months after giving up the research director title, I had to think and clear my head. I went on a hike at one of my favorite trails, the Lewis Creek Trail. About 15 minutes away from the south gate of Yosemite, it looks just like you're in Yosemite. On a weekday, there might be one or two others out on the trail, and that's it. This is one of the beauties of working in the ER. We have weird hours and are often off when other people are working. There's a creek in the middle of the forest with a waterfall at each end of the trail and has always been one of the places I go to clear my head when I'm fizzling in. I dropped off my then 2-year-old son at school with just enough time to drive up, hike, and drive back down to pick him up. In that moment, I was angry at everything. Hiking enough to clear it through, I got out my notebook and started to write. Every part of my job was making me upset. The clinical work, my research, the administrative parts. My fuse at home was very short and I would get angry at my husband and 2-year-old. I wasn't even noticing what my friends were going through because I was in my own head so much. I didn't feel like I was really there for my family properly, and I certainly wasn't there for myself. I was at a breaking point. I furiously wrote about all the events and people I was upset about. I was mostly upset with coworkers that seemed to get away with things others wouldn't, and their superiors who didn't see it as unfair and treated them differently than others. It's one of my personality traits that I always want people to be treated equally, but with that comes a flaw in that I can't stand by in silence when I feel inequality is perpetuated. And unfortunately, I'm not the nicest person to deal with when that happens. I was tired of trying to make my case. So instead, this made me not want to work anymore, or care about work anymore, which was very unlike me since I'd been a hard worker my whole life. In fact, I thought that my work defined me. I'm a doctor. If I'm not that, then what am I? I didn't want to give up any more parts of my job or look for a job elsewhere. However, I could not see an end to the coworker issues or my growing feeling of being disrespected by my superiors. We talk so much about working hard to get to where you are. Then you get there and you have to keep working hard, and maybe with people who have very different work styles and opinions than you. The thing is, when do we get a break? I guess I kept thinking I would get a break at some point, but I couldn't see the breaks, especially with a small child and working in two specialties in academic medicine. That's when I realized that my two-year-long burn-in phase had slowly led to burn-out. I want to give you a happy ending here, but I'll save it for the next episode. After a lot of hard work, I've recovered enough to try to help others with burnout through this podcast and other means. Next time, I'll talk about burnout to finally burning through and coming out the other side. Thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, share, and download the podcast. And again, you can find us at Human School Podcast on Instagram. I'd like to thank Dr. Zac Efron for the theme music of our podcast. And I'd just like to make a general disclaimer that any of the institutions I work for, including Community Regional Medical Center, UCSF, UCSF Fresno, and American Ambulance, have nothing to do with any of my thoughts or opinions. And so we'll kindly leave them out of this. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.